Hi there, I'm Barry Forward, and welcome to the Reboot Forward podcast. This is the podcast where we take a deep dive into the wonderful world of change, reinvention, transformation, and just plain doing something different. In particular, how it impacts the people who go through that change, what they've learned from their journey through change, and ultimately, what has allowed them to reboot forward. Today on the podcast, we're fortunate enough to have with us award-winning speaker and writer Michael Poldi. Michael takes us on his journey through an extremely tragic event that occurred in his life back in 2009, up to where he is today. He's the author of two books. He's working on a third, which he has tentatively called The Renaissance of Resilience. And until recently, Michael was director of global business continuity at IBM and focused the majority of his career on business resilience. Beyond his work as a resiliency consultant, Michael volunteers at D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services, assisting suicide survivors, providing guidance and mentoring to those who have lost a loved one to suicide. Here is Michael's story. So, Mike, tell me about change. You've had a lot of change in your life. What does change mean to you?
Well, first of all, Barry, thanks for having me on. It's great to be able to talk to you today and talk about what I think are some really pressing and important discussion points that I think a lot of people are not willing to discuss. But if you look at change, when I look at change, it's really more opportunity. I know when I was young and growing up and we would move, we didn't move a lot. I mean, I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, which is, it's a small, big city. I mean, some people say it's part of the South. It's not part of the South, but when I was there, it was definitely the South. And, you know, we would move 5 miles from the house I grew up on, and we were in dirt roads and, we would call them fruit shacks. And you know, it was a really interesting awakening for me because I had to reinvent myself. I had to reinvent my friends and my habits and where I went and played. And as I grew up and got older, I either purposely or, you know, by lessons of life, I just fell into more and more situations where the life and environment around me was changing, either accidentally or otherwise. And I started taking it as opportunities, is how can I reinvent myself? How can I learn from the people who are around me? And how can I grow?
When you talk about reinvention, you throw reinvention and you and I are sitting here talking and it sounds all positive and wonderful, you know, hey, you're going to move forward, but a lot of change isn't easy. It's not, it doesn't come across our desk just like, oh, here, you're going to change. It's new opportunity. It's sometimes tragedy.
Well, it's exactly right. And sometimes I've heard the phrase a few times and I like it, is sometimes you have to go down before you can go up. And you never really know what you really are built of until you are really into a position where you are low and down and you think that things are not going to work out for the better.
You have a lot of faith in humanity, of people to be resilient. Resilience been, you described it to me before we got onto the discussion, as being your life work. What does it mean as a human? What are we capable of coming out of when it comes and reinventing ourselves?
I think people are capable of quite a lot. I think it's important in terms of attitude. I think it's important of environment, meaning what kind of people do you surround yourself with? What kind of positivity you can create or is emitted toward you? Are you around an area or a group of people or a situation that creates a lot of drama and antagonistic type of attitudes? Or are you on an environment where you can kind of see past the negativity and you can see past the drama for what it is and to a point where you can move forward and you create a certain velocity in your life where it's not necessarily that you're ignoring bad things, because that's never going to happen, but you can keep that type of disappointment or unfortunate activities that we all have to struggle with, and you keep it in the perspective.
Maybe you can share with us your kind of, I would call, pivotal event happened a long time ago, but maybe it'll illustrate really well what it means to I want to say endure, but it's not that. It's coming to come through, do what you have to do to survive that ordeal, and then move forward.
Yeah, so let me kind of set the table, so to speak. The event that you're talking about, it was the loss of my wife, Anne. Happened February 25th, 2009, so about 11 and a half years ago. And around that time, we have three boys. One of them was a freshman in college. One was a senior in high school. One was at the time was a freshman in high school, and I was a executive with IBM at the time, traveling the world, lots of things going on, managing a relatively decent sized business within the IBM company. And I was on a business trip, and my wife died, and I got a call from the coroner in Boulder, Colorado at the time, who effectively told me. And I caught on a plane and I got home, and I, fortunately I had some really great people that, were able to help me get, you know, make sure that my kids were taken care of until I got home. And, my sister flew in from Florida, and some other friends came in as well over the next, 48 hours. And, as part of my professional life, I handle crisis. I handle disaster recovery, business continuity, resiliency is the modern term for that discipline in the technology world. And I was really the way I was addressing it is like, well, I guess I have my own crit set that I'm working right now. And even though I'm making a little light of it, it was anything but a lightful situation. So I got home and within a few hours and had my kids around me, and we started addressing suicide, and we started, I went into therapy right away. I had my children into therapy to see a trained therapist within 48 hours of the event. And the whole idea was, mentally to try to not necessarily understand what had happened, because there's a lot of tricky elements to suicide that you want to create create some rationale around an event that is completely irrational. And around it, unfortunately, people that take their lives, their mental outlook is not always the way it would be what you would expect in a normal, in a more of a normal situation. So the whole activity was really how to make sure that my kids and myself were getting into the right, lane, so to speak, so we could navigate through this challenge. And let me just say, words cannot describe the overwhelming impact of suicide.
You know, it's, I hear it and I get, it's just that I can't imagine. Right. And the question that just pops up is, you're talking resiliency, we're talking rebounding. What was it that gave you the wherewithal or the ability to rebound, to, I don't want to say prosper, but move to continue on with your world so that your kids and you could have a life after mm-hmm. that?
Well, and let's be a little bit clear on the rebound, because I'm somewhat of a basketball fan, and I think rebound, and you know, things are moving very quickly, and my rebound is really glacial. I think it took me probably close to 5 years to get to a point where I think I could live a life that I felt very positive and very optimistic. I mean, there was crack after 1 year, you know, there was some cracks, you know, in the glass ceiling that I was continually up against. And with every year I was able to progress a little bit better. But, you know, to look at your question a little bit more discreetly, everyone who goes through this, meaning anyone who's a survivor of suicide and they've lost a loved one, whether it's a parent or a sibling or a child or a friend, they go through their own personal journey. Everyone's got to find their own way. And I fortunately was able to find my way. And there's definitely overlap. Parts of my experience are similar to someone else's, but the reality is everyone has to do their own thing. And so for me, the first thing that what was most important was really having a trained therapist, a trained psychologist who really could help me personally that I could talk to. And I spoke to that individual in the initial stages every day. And then it went to every 3 days and then once a week. And then I was able to kind of, after 3.5 years, was finally able to fly on my own, so to speak. My children, they each went and saw a trained person every week for a year. And then I let them decide however they wanted to embrace that. So that was one, having a trained guide to get me through that. And then the second piece, which I think was very important, was having a team of people that you could depend on. And my team was composed of a few members of my family and a number of close friends. And, you know, the interesting thing too is, and this is one of those commonalities that you see, and I provide counseling. I co-facilitate group counseling for suicide loss survivors in Los Angeles. And we see this often, is that people that you expect are going to be there for you are not always there. And then people that you may barely know all of a sudden rise up and they are the cornerstone to get you through this. So that was really it. Those were really, I think, the two biggest points. There was a number of other issues along the way, but I think having a trained expert combined with a team of people who I felt supported me, loved me, cared for me, they were able to be there as I needed, as I really went through this crazy wild ride.
There was the grief part of this. There's all the things that, you know, you're just talking about, working with your counselors and psychologists and folks. And in what I understand is that eventually you were awakened to a new reality about life, I would say, a new reality of life. You described it to me when we talked before this conversation as being part of a club now. Right. Part of a club. And although it being a very, you know, tragic, difficult situation, there was some upside to that, if you will, that club.
Yeah, it's the club that no one wants to be a part of, is the way it's phrased. And really, you know, upside is kind of an interesting term. In fact, group session where we were talking about, and there was 8 women, including a trained therapist who's the other co-facilitator of the group, and all of them lost either a father, spouse, or child, and all lost someone because of a gunshot wound. And you know, through the course of our sessions, you know, we cover a lot of different topics. And then towards the end, you know, someone made a comment that said, because there's been some documents that have been written and about, you know, the upside and the positivity. And the reality is there's not necessarily upside is really not the right word for this.
Thanks for correcting me.
No, a long way to say that. But what it does is, at least for me personally, it's given me an opportunity to recognize a couple of different things. One, I have a lot of perspective on life. Things such as, if I get a speeding ticket, and it's like, okay, no, I can write a check. I can go to traffic school. It's not a big deal. There's the parking ticket. I mean, the parking place gets stolen from me. I can't get into the right show or concert. Things like that people may or may not be really stressed about. You don't get stressed about those things anymore. You have a completely different perspective on life. You also recognize that people that, let's just say, as my children, they lost their mother. And when I see my friends who have kids in the same age demographic, when I see their talk about their kids, or their kids aren't, coming to Thanksgiving, or they're not calling home as often as they have, it's like, look, at least your kids, they have a mom. And they just need to recognize, and I wish I could, communicate this in such a, definitive fashion, but I really wish that people could recognize how fortunate they are with these connections and personal relationships that you almost take for granted after so many years, and you expect people to just be there.
It's so, life is fleeting, which is what you're saying. And but this event provided you with a unique, your own way of looking at this. And when you look at others, I mean, and I, again, we're sitting here talking about it, and it's a very personal story that you're relating here. What would you say to somebody who hasn't gone through this? Like, because you're talking in the D.D. Hirsch to people who have gone through it, and then there's people who haven't had this.
Exactly, and you're referring to in Los Angeles, there's a place called D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services, and they help people both with who have lost a loved one to suicide, and people who are concerned or depressed, and they may be close to taking their own life. In fact, they run one of several call centers in the United States that if you call the 800 number, there are people there that provide that support. And many cities around the United States and Canada, they have these types of facilities, either close or you can connect to them. But it's really, in my mind, it's really about, look, life gets in the way. I get that. There's things in life that bring you joy and bring you happiness, and you'll get to it later. In fact, my comment, I said this before Ann passed away, is my comment was there's no tomorrow. And what I mean by that comment is, you hear all the time, I live in Los Angeles, there's all sorts of cool stuff that goes on, not right now, but usually there's lots of cool things you can do. And a good example is there's quirky events and museums, like there was the ice cream museum that was here. And I was like, oh, I really want to go to the ice cream museum. I'll go tomorrow. I'll go next weekend. Well, life gets in the way. And of course, I never made it. So the whole concept, and it became much more acute after Ann passed away, which is there is no tomorrow. Meaning, if you see something and you want to experience it, or if there's some possession you feel that you have to have, or if there's some person in your life that you haven't talked to them in a while or told them that you love them, don't wait. Just do it. Just pick up the phone and call. Put on your calendar tomorrow at 4:00. I'm going to go to this museum and experience this photography show, or I'm going to see my friend, or I'm going to have lunch next Tuesday. Don't wait, because you never know when something is going to happen that is so acute and significant that there really is no tomorrow.
You come at it from your perspective, and perspective is really kind of an interesting thing here. But what do you think? I mean, here we are, middle of a pandemic, and you know, we hear the stats probably weekly, you know, mental health and suicide rates are up. And what is the perspective from your point of view? Can you offer this scenario?
Well, you know, we've all been dealing with this for 6-7 months now, with various degrees of lockdown and social distancing. And I know that some communities are a little bit closer than others, but I really think it's perspective. At some point, this will end. There are things that people can and should be taking advantage of. Exercise. You may not be able to go to the gym, but you can go for a walk. You can go for a run. There's places that you can drive to. A lot of places that you can go for short trips or drive. So it's, you have to be creative. I think there's a lot of creativity going around. And in fact, if you look at Instagram, and if you watch TikToks, or if you read the newspapers or whatever your outlet is for reading and understanding, you know, you're watching a lot of people do a lot of really interesting things and picking up new hobbies and reading books that they never thought they would read, or getting into education. There's so much education online. So I think it's really a matter of people. I would hope that people are leveraging this to seize the opportunity to find something new and something important to do. Now, on the flip side, there are a lot of people also that have been unsuccessful at this. And there are a lot of people really struggling, and they just don't have the energy. And I think for those individuals, it would be great if they had someone they could call. Whether they're calling a support line, or they can go talk to someone who's a professional at this, or if they have a friend or a loved one that can help them get through it.
You talk about that a lot, is the people around you, surrounding yourself with people. And there is a pandemic of sorts going around called loneliness. A lot of people isolated, especially with social media these days. How important is it to have those social interactions, those people in your life that you can call on? And how important is it for us who may deem ourselves healthy at this moment to reach out to others?
I think it's so important. And in fact, I think that's one of the really damaging elements of the pandemic, and why I think the mental health challenges have increased so significantly, is that people are having a hard time with that personal interaction. You know, they're used to seeing their friends and seeing their loved ones in a certain context, and that context is broken. I can't go to the retirement home where my parents are. I can't go to the watering hole where I socialize with the friends. The block parties are not what they used to be, and it's hard. It's absolutely hard. And unfortunately, I don't think there is a magic bullet here.
I saw it with my gym. I used to go to the gym every morning early, mm-hmm. and had a group of individuals who'd show up there every day, just crazy like me, up at 5:20. And we'd be in front of the gym trying to bang on the door, get in. And all of a sudden that was taken away from us. And it was hard, because these were people, even though it was just kind of an hour in the morning, these are important people, interactions in my world. So I saw it happen. People, question, you know, your journey beyond 2009, it is here you are today, 2020. A lot has gone on in your world. You've, you know, author of a couple of books. You got a couple others on the way, but they have a lot to do with this whole idea. There is no tomorrow. What have you been doing?
Well, So after my wife passed away, and I got my kids at what I thought were on a really stable platform, meaning I got them all out of the house and got them all into college and on the way to jobs, I sold my house. I sold most of my personal possessions, and I moved to Asia for a couple of years. And fortunately, I was able to maintain my employment with IBM, and I was able to travel across 16 countries, and I was able to climb or trek to Mount Everest Base Camp and do a lot of really fun things. Saw the Komodo dragons in Indonesia. Just a lot of things that I thought in my 20s, quite frankly, that I would probably never experience. And all of a sudden, in my late 40s, it all of a sudden became an opportunity for me. And when I was there in living in Asia, I met a lot of people that were from everywhere but the United States. And I got to pretty much get a very eye-opening view of how other people in the world live. And quite frankly, I mean, in the United States, and I love the United States, and I'm happy to be here, and I love living here and all the things that the United States provides me. But watching these people who live in Asia and from Europe is they travel a lot. And they go out a lot and they explore a lot. And it is nothing for a lot of these people to just go and live in another country for 3 months or 6 months or whatever. And so I really embraced that part of it. And you know, I'm trying to remember the name of the person who gave the quote, but the quote goes something like this: you know, the more I learn, the more I find out, the more I don't know. And that I want to learn and I want to keep learning. And that's really, I think for me personally, it's really helped me go to a new level of where my whole, I won't say it's my mission in life, but my whole quest is to try to learn and understand as much as I can about as many things as I can before my time is up. So I think that's, you know, part of the reason for the books that I'm writing, and as well as helping others who have lost loved ones. Because quite frankly, I learn a lot from these people, and I still think about Anne every day. I miss her every day. I know my kids miss her, and we talk about her. And I use that as a reminder that not to stop. And keep finding ways to keep going.
So what's next for you? And as you look out at 2021 coming up, do you look at it day by day? Do you look that far in advance?
Well, if I look back to 2009, and it was really just getting through the day. My whole objective in the world was just get through the day. And I... when I talk to survivors, that's a common thread that we have. And there's also a little something called the 4 o'clock club, where people are like, are you getting up at 4 o'clock? Yeah. Okay. It's going to go on for about 4 to 6 months. So, you know, get used to it. And then as the years went by, then it got to be a lot easier for me to function and look farther ahead. And now I'm not exactly looking down the road 50 years from now, but I am looking at, you know, a few years out, and I can see a future, which is awesome. It's actually to have a life that your future has been taken away from you. By circumstances, not intentionally, but you can't see it anymore. It just doesn't exist. And then to have the curtain slowly over time raise where you now can see a future, it's such a thrill that I wish it's an experience. While I never would wish this experience on anyone, but to be able to know that perspective of losing something and losing someone so close, but losing so many things, there's so much collateral damage that goes along with this, that to have it, to be able to regain that capability and regain that outlook, it really creates a lot of energy and a lot of excitement out there. So yeah, there's a lot of great things ahead.
Well, I have to say it's inspiring to talk to you. It's calming in a way to talk to you. I've been kind of wrestling with this whole pandemic and what's been going on. And I just want to thank you for talking and sharing your story today. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, talk about the whole journey of this journey you just mentioned. How would they get a hold of you?
So they can go to my website, which is www.puldy.com, or they can find me on LinkedIn at my user ID, which is M Puldy. And I also encourage them to go say hello to Ann. And Ann can be found at Ann Puldy, ANNPULDY.com.
And thank you, Michael, for sharing your story with us. A lot of us are wrestling with mental health challenges here in 2020. If you or someone you know is in immediate danger because of thoughts of suicide, call 911. If you are not in immediate danger but need someone to talk to about suicidal feelings, call one of the following national suicide prevention lines. In the U.S., it's 1-800-273-8255. In Canada, call 1-833-456-4566. If you're not in Canada or the U.S., please call your local emergency number. If you would like to contact me or any of the guests on the podcast, please do not hesitate to reach out. Contact me at Barry@rebootforward.com.